This lecture, after proceedings by Reverend N. B. Cryer, M.A., is the 12th of 20 lectures supplied to members of Quattro Coronati Correspondence Circle on audio cassette in 1989. Worshipful Brother Don Ray, the preceptor of the Linford Lodge of Research, was given permission for the transcription and including on the Linford website in July 2021. Copyright of the audio material is retained by Quattro Coronati Correspondence Circle.
There must be many a worshipful master of a lodge who finds himself concerned about the after proceedings. You know what I mean. The master will have worked hard to learn how to open and close the lodge, as well as the ritual and ceremony of one of the degrees. And he finally breathes a sigh of relief as he welcomes the candidate and invites him to take his place in the lodge. Only then does he perhaps pause to recall that he still has half the evening ahead of him, and for this he may well have not been rehearsed or prepared in any way. I refer, of course, to the fact that following the often successful work done in the temple, there is still the continuing and important work of conducting affairs at the dinner table, where he will occupy a seat of special prominence. How many masters I have known who have groaned at the prospect and wished that their responsibilities had ceased when the ceremonial work in the temple was over. Learning and presenting a degree ceremony is one thing. Being the chairman and manager of the after proceedings is quite another. Indeed, it has also been my common experience that a worshipful master who has performed especially well in the lodge room is either confused, ill at ease, or just plain unhappy when he contemplates the task that surrounds and engulfs what should be an enjoyable dinner for him and for all the other brethren present. If that prospect is one that you have undergone, or one that you're not looking forward to, then this is the tape for you. I hope that at the end of it, you will not only have been helped yourself, but will be able to assist another master in avoiding what you might have suffered. If you're still a warden, then may you come to the after proceedings with a completely different attitude when your time as master arrives. The first thing to be grasped is that at the dining table, you are to be in charge. It's the case that in some parts of the country, attempts are apparently made to assist the master in the after proceedings by allowing the immediate past master or the director of ceremonies at this point to have the directing of the lodge in their hands. Indeed, there are some provinces in which there seems to be some kind of regulation requiring someone other than the worshipful master to exercise the right of sounding the gavel. Whatever the case in your particular part of the country or in your district overseas, it has to be recognized that the worshipful master is still in charge. And it is with his concurrence that soundings are given, silence called for, and wine-taking, notices or toasts are shared. As the master of a lodge, it's to you that all have a right to look for direction and decision in what now takes place. It is therefore essential that you should have a clear idea of what has to be done, and should, if you are wise, plan at home and before the meeting what is your pleasure in regard to the various parts of the after proceedings. If you are clear about the program at the dinner table, then it is more than likely that all will go smoothly, and neither you nor the members and the guests will be upset or embarrassed by sudden changes or unexpected actions. The matters which ought to be decided in good time before the dinner comes are these: the seating at the top table, the time for and the number of wine takings, if that is your local custom, and the order and manner of presenting the toasts, not forgetting some reasonable notice for those who have to respond. Let me say a word about each of these. The proper arrangement of the seating for the principal guests at a lodge dinner table is one of the duties that rightly occupy the lodge stewards who may have asked permission to leave the lodge room before the closing of the lodge proper. It has, of course, to be recognized that lodges differ in this respect all over the world. But a general rule can be followed, and only varied according to special lodge custom. What is important is that the stewards in charge of ensuring that the table is to the master's liking should be given a simple plan by him before the lodge meeting began. The worshipful master will sit at the center of the top table, and in order from him on his left will be the immediate past master, the chaplain, the director of ceremonies, the treasurer, secretary, and then the senior past masters. On his right will be the grand officers in order of seniority, unless it is the evening of an official visit on behalf of the province or district, and then the member of the provincial executive or the provincial grand master's appointee will take the place next to the master. Even this precedence will be broken on the night of an initiation, for then it is customary, but not always so, as my visits in some parts of Britain have shown, for the newly initiated brother to be given this place of honour next to the master on his right. When the grand officers have been seated, then the remaining places will be taken up by the senior provincial, district, or London grand rank brethren. This arrangement, let me repeat, is not mandatory, and there are some grand officers who are very happy to sit with their hosts elsewhere, or who may ask if their personal guests can accompany them on the top table. Each lodge will be flexible and will have its own ways of meeting these variations. In Bristol, as elsewhere, it is sometimes the custom to place all the visiting worshipful masters next to the grand officers on the right, and this regular placing at least gives the stewards a clear guide as to what is required. What matters, let me say again, is not rigid adherence to any one formula, but a clear direction from the master as to how he wants things arranged at his lodge's table when they come to sit down. If a table plan can be made for the brethren to consult before dinner, that also eases matters when the time for dinner is called. In the earlier part of this century, it was quite usual for full Masonic regalia to be worn at table. But this is now hardly anywhere seen, and even where it might be an occasion for the wearing of collars, it should be the master who decides after consulting his senior lodge officers. All the brethren having found their places, the director of ceremonies usually announces the entry of the worshipful master. And it is very much to be hoped that he will be greeted with free and spontaneous clapping, and not the solemn, slow clap beloved of livery companies, but which caused one wife of a ruler of the craft to exclaim, when she saw her husband so greeted, "Oh, Don't they like you, my dear? A free round of applause is what is recommended in Grand Lodge for receiving the Grand Master or his substitute. And a similar form for the entry of ordinary masters would seem to be fitting. Following grace, which need not always be couched in the same words, the meal begins, and the director of ceremonies should already have been alerted beforehand as to when the master would like the taking of wine, if that is the custom of the lodge, to begin. To do it at all requires the brethren to have their glasses charged, and some natural system for ensuring that this is so has to be agreed. Some lodges seek to do it by asking a question of the senior and junior wardens, which is fine if the lodge is small and with two sprigs, but in larger lodges and at bigger occasions it can easily overlook other diners. One simple modern way of doing this is to charge a steward on each table to report to one of their number that all are served with wine, and then that brother informs the director of ceremonies or the worshipful master that all are ready to drink. Wine taking under the control of the worshipful master is a practice that was properly introduced to replace the noisy and often unbridled cross-toasting that still continues in some parts and is, when experienced, seen to add little to the decorum and good conduct of the dinner. Yet the practice of wine-taking itself can easily get out of hand, and there has to be some control of its extent. I have myself been present when 22 risings to take wine have been announced, and the practice then becomes unacceptably intrusive, if not ridiculous. No one can legislate in this matter, but I would like to suggest from experience a simple guideline. Try to avoid any duplication of wine-taking so that no one rises more than once. This could then result in a modest number of risings by the worshipful master, who also wants to enjoy his dinner, and enables the conversation of the brethren to be but rarely interrupted. As a standard, perhaps, 4 or 5 such wine-takings should be the limit. Again, the worshipful master needs to think out whom he wants to recognize in this way and make his list. Members of other orders or degrees and other secular associations are not people to call up at craft dinners, nor is it necessary to reintroduce everyone to the usual officers of the lodge. The dinner now proceeds with the master confident that only the calling for grace after dinner and the formal toasts and their proposal remains to be done. To be relaxed and happy at this point, certain things need to have been prepared long before he entered the dining room. For the sake of regularity, let me first state what these are, and then we can look at each of them in detail. He must be sure that an up-to-date toast list, as approved by the province or district, is to hand when he is in his place at the table. 2. He must have decided who is going to propose each toast, and if he is going to delegate any toasts other than those to the Queen and the Most Worshipful the Grand Master, then he must be sure that reasonable notice is given to the brethren concerned. 3. He needs to have chosen the one or more persons who are to respond to any toast, and again ensure that the longest possible warning is given. 4. He will be well advised to decide with his director of ceremonies as to who is giving the fire after each toast, so that he or any other brother is ready to act. 5, he will be expected to give a speech himself, and however brief it may be, he should think carefully about what he is going to say. 6, he will ensure that the tiler, or his substitute, will be on hand to close the after proceedings with the usual words. Stated in this way, it can be seen that there is a not inconsiderable amount of preparation to be done. And this is why it is certainly a most sensible thing to arrange a short rehearsal of the anticipated after proceedings at the last lodge of instruction practice or officer's practice night immediately prior to the lodge meeting proper. When this is done, as in some lodges, the effect on the conduct of the after proceedings is immediately evident. To resume, however, with these final tasks at dinner. 1. It is but the work of a few moments to read through the official toast list and seek to become familiar with all the possible pitfalls that might trap the unwary. As, for example, when the puzzled worshipful master says the M.W. Provincial G.M. instead of the Most Worshipful Pro Grand Master. If there are titles or initials that are unfamiliar, then before dinner is the time to sort them out. To a person who can learn the ritual, there is nothing to be afraid of. Once acquired, the knowledge of how to address our rulers correctly is a talent that can be widely employed. 2. It is both normal and natural for the proposing of toasts to the province or district and to the guests to be handed to other brethren. The principle to be observed is that those who are entrusted with toasts will discharge them with care and attention, and have been asked to do them with such notice that they can then be spared any apologies on their part, be admirably brief and to the point, and address themselves to the object of the toast and not wander off into some topic of their own fancy. Whilst natural humour is a pleasant gift, the telling of stories of a doubtful kind is to be shunned. 3. Whilst the representative of a province or district will come ready to respond to his appropriate toast, it is always courteous to ensure that he is ready to reply when called on, and by the same token, grand officers and the guests chosen to respond should also be given notice of an answer, at least before they sit down to a meal, and long before that, if possible. To be the second responder to the toast for the guests requires a special skill, and it is therefore undesirable to ask anyone to do that unless you are sure that the person designated can handle it. 4. Some lodges, of course, do not employ Masonic fire, but those that do have every right to expect that the person leading them is confident and competent to do so. This is something that every master must rehearse, and if he wishes the director of ceremonies to carry it out, then let him be told beforehand so that there is no embarrassing hesitation. Sudden choices of another brother to do it as a kind of joke or test is not really a desirable practice. 5. Whilst it is not in the power of every man to be a fine orator, it is surely recognized by every worshipful master that he will have to say something at each dinner occasion. The opening and closing of his speech can follow standard forms, though these are not essential. And of course he can thank the proposer for things he has said in particular. It is not the best speech to make it a list of notices. And it would seem better if the master seized on one point, the charity he is supporting with a list, the special need or achievement of a lodge brother, or an experience he has had in visiting other lodges, etc., and then make something of this as his contribution to the evening. No one expects too much, but everyone hopes that the master has thought it out beforehand. Finally, as the master reaches the end of the toast list and calls upon the tiler, or the brother acting as such, he should be able to echo the words, "Happy have we met, happy have we been, happy may we part." This will be the case if he, the worshipful master, has taken the same loving care about the after proceedings as he took with the ritual which he spent so many hours in learning to the best of his ability. Of course, there are many more matters of detail and finesse that could have been included in this tape, but these cannot be dealt with here. The matter of songs is one that you will find dealt with on the other side of this tape. What has been said has been intended to make this part of a master's evening as enjoyable as it can be. If he is at ease, so will be his brethren. The after proceedings may then even become a truly festive board.